Welcome to Merely Catholic with me, Gavin Ashenden. There's nothing new about the Church experiencing a crisis. What matters more, perhaps, is the remedy. In the 19th century, Cardinal St. John Henry Newman addressed the crisis in the Church of England with some bluntness and suggested the remedy was to rejoin the Mother Church. He was pretty direct about his former community. Looking back after he'd left, he gave a fairly brutal assessment of its shortcomings. How can that be practically a church? How can it teach which speaks half a dozen different things in the same breath, he wrote. He complained not only about its disorganized state of belief, but also its feebleness to resist heretics, its many changes, its freezing coldness. The thought of Anglicanism with nothing fixed or settled, with bishop contradicting bishop, is something so dreary and wretched I cannot speak of it without the chance of offence to those who still hold it, he said to a friend. However, if any contemporary Catholic were for a moment lured into a sense of complacency or superiority, it would be instantly dissolved by the recognition that the Catholic Church today is struggling with a similar gravitational pull into incoherence and relativism. Bishop against bishop, feebleness to resist heretics, disorganized state of belief. It sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? So St. John Henry's uncompromising reliance on the apostolic deposit of faith presents a serious rebuke and challenge to the secularizing spirit that has slipped into the Catholic Church in the last few decades. His challenge to secularization is matched by his remedies of his life and writing. The primacy of the informed conscience is not just another invitation to individuality, but rather it's the opposite. It's an invitation to the individual to allow one's conscience to be formed and reconstituted by a quality of absolute moral truth that reflects the sanctity of revelation rather than the priority of personal preferences. But there's more to the communion of saints than teaching and example. There's intervention as well. And this is where life in the spirit becomes exciting as well as informing. In 2005, an American called Jack Sullivan was healed by prayer from a serious spinal cord disorder. The healing itself was medically dramatic, but the inspiration for the healing was theologically dramatic. It was by the intercession of Cardinal Newman. It took 4 years for the medical circumstances to be fully investigated and then certified as miraculous, but the consequence was that Newman was beatified in 2010. So far, so good, and not only good, but also inspiring. Until another American, this time a Catholic lawyer and a mother, called Melissa Villalobos, was pregnant with her fifth child. She had developed a relationship of profound friendship with John Henry Newman over a number of years, but she experienced a dramatic medical emergency during the pregnancy, which threatened not only the life of her child, but her own too. In a state of dramatic collapse and bleeding heavily, she turned to Cardinal Newman and asked for his help and his prayers, and he was almost instantaneously healed. Both her baby's life and also her own were saved. After the second miracle was also thoroughly examined by the authorities, Pope Francis took the steps towards bringing about Cardinal Newman's canonization in 2019. Timing always has a place in the exercise of spiritual discernment, so it seems sensible to ask if this intervention of St. John Henry Newman into the life of the Church through intercession has more to say to us today than the simple, potent refreshment of faith and the experience of Christ's mercy. I thought there was no one better to ask about the spiritual and theological implications of this miracle than Melissa Villalobos herself. She joins me now. A very warm welcome to Melissa Villalobos. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us from America today for our podcast. And we're going to talk about St. John Henry Newman, because you were instrumental in being the subject or the prime mover of the second miracle that moved his course from beatification to canonization. And I wonder, although everyone should have heard the details of what happened, would you mind rehearsing them for people who come to this fresh?
Of course. Cardinal Newman miraculously cured me in my pregnancy with my fifth child, Gemma. In that pregnancy, I had a partially detached placenta, which had become separated from the uterine wall, and there was this hole in it, and so I was hemorrhaging blood. This was going on for several weeks before he cured me, and there was no medical treatment available for me because there was nothing the doctor could do The only thing he prescribed was strict bed rest, but I had four other young children at home, and so that was not really an option, and my husband had to work full time. So on that day that I reached out for him to help me, he cured me completely. Obviously, I'm incredibly grateful, and I still am in awe and very thankful to God and to him for this.
So the baby's life was saved, and potentially yours as well as a mother. And the medical records showed this, and your own background is you're a lawyer, so you're not easily moved by insubstantial evidence. What was behind your relationship with St. John Henry Newman?
Yes, well, in August of 2011, my husband went to this Evening of Recollection prayer group, and he brought home two holy cards with his image on them, and he said, "Oh, look what I got." It was the first time that I had ever really seen his face, and I took the two cards, and it's kind of funny because in hindsight, I think my husband probably got one for himself and one for me, and I took both of them. But my husband's very generous, so I took them, and I put one in our family room on the fireplace mantle, and then I put the other one upstairs in our bedroom. And I would pass by these cards throughout the days, and I would see his face, and I would talk to him, and I would talk to him about whatever was on my mind. And I was just really drawn to his expression. I thought he seemed so present and so modern. He looked like someone to me that could be alive today. He didn't look like someone that lived a long time ago who wouldn't understand my current issues or concerns. And we just started this wonderful relationship. I would look into his eyes, and I thought that his expression always matched my emotion. If I had a concern, he seemed sympathetic. If I felt joy, he seemed ready to share in that joy. And I commented to him on how beautiful I thought he looked, supernaturally so. And then I got very curious about him, and I thought, you know, who is this person that I'm just talking to all the time? Obviously, he's a cardinal. He's got to be pretty smart and holy. I should learn more about him. So I went on the internet and I went on Google and I searched his name and I found this website called newmanreader.org. And I was just absolutely stunned at the volume of work out there that he had written. It was like finding gold in the backyard. You know, I just couldn't believe it. And I could search almost any topic you could think of and find something brilliant that he had written about it. And he was not only now my friend, but he was like my spiritual director. And I was learning so much about the church in depth that I hadn't fully understood before. Then for a moment, I was a little intimidated. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. Now I found out my best friend is a genius. How are we going to continue on in this relationship? And then I felt very much comforted by the fact that I discovered all these letters he had written to ordinary people. And so I took comfort in that because I thought, well, I could be like one of those ordinary people that he corresponded with. He seemed to, despite his brilliance, have such an affection for regular people. So I thought I could be educated by him as my spiritual director. And of course, we could continue on in our friendship because he could love me just as he did all of those other people in his life.
He was, as you say, the most extraordinary friend, soul friend and spiritual director. And in his letters, one discovers all kinds of astonishing nuggets. For me, for an Englishman, for someone who's been an Anglican, he's particularly important because he charts the path of reconciliation towards Rome. And there are a number of aspects to him that immediately impinge on our present situation. I mean, certainly where we are, there's a sense that the Protestant experiment is beginning to fail, and he displays the way home. He's got that wonderful prayer that God has made each one for a particular task, and our job is to find our own vocation, which has been an inspiration to many. Mm-hmm. But in terms of some of the charisms he brings to the church, as you went through your voluminous reading, his letters and essays, what struck you as being most important, both for your life today personally, but also for the church that we're all part of?
It truly is hard to narrow it down because he's had such a richness to his life and all of his works. But when I look back on his life, I think about when he was made a cardinal in the church, you know, by Pope Leo XIII in 1879, he spoke out against the dangers of liberalism in religion, you know, what we also call moral relativism. I think that considering he had been speaking out against this for nearly 50 years, and he chose that moment to bring it up again when he had the Pope as a captive audience, it really shows us how important that issue is. And I think it's still important today, maybe even more so. you know, that's this concept that there's no positive truth in religion, that it's just a matter of opinion. And we shouldn't be concerned with what a man believes. It's up to him as it is what he chooses to wear in terms of his clothing. And I'm afraid, you know, it seems like the Catholic Church is not really marketing itself as the one true fold of Christ in many instances, but we really just want to be part of the wonderful choices out there for people to consider. It brings the question, why would we do that? You know, and that brings up other issues of Newman. If we're not willing to say that it is the one true fold of Christ, then we have to ask ourselves, well, is it because we don't really believe that? Is it a crisis of faith? Or are we just becoming not compassionate towards our neighbor? We don't really care if our neighbor gets the sanctifying grace needed for eternal salvation. As long as we have it, then it doesn't matter who else gets it or not. And so all those issues then, I think, relate to conscience. Where is our conscience? And of course, Newman wrote at length on conscience as well. I think that these things are tied together, the issue of liberalism and religion that we need to watch out for, and conscience. If our conscience is well formed, if we have that sense of that indwelling of the Holy Spirit, then we should naturally want to bring others into the church.
And he had a great preoccupation for the road towards holiness, of course, too. And so one gets the sense that it's holiness that is the protection against the watering down of liberalism, relativism, and modernity, which comes as in the same kind of way. It's almost as if what we're experiencing today is not a recapitulation of history, so much as a recapitulation of a spiritual struggle, mm-hmm. one in which he exemplifies the values that are at the heart of the church. How do you see his holiness as relating to a repudiation of liberalism and relativism?
Oh, yes, it's absolutely necessary. I know when he wrote about conscience, he said that it must of necessity be informed, enlightened, and deepened by study, reflection, and prayer. And so even though we have this conscience that we're born with, I feel like what he's saying is that if we don't nurture it on the path to holiness, then it will not be well formed. Sadly, I think in the culture, as a mother, and you know, Newman cured me as a mother, so I find that interesting, but we see so much in the culture that seems to be trying to attack our conscience, especially children. And I feel like I have to constantly protect my children from everything. You can't turn on the television or turn on the radio or even go to the grocery store with books and magazines. You have to be careful what's out there. If we don't do that, if we don't protect the children and their conscience, then it'll be hard for them to grow in holiness. And so I think the real danger is that people don't even have a sense of right and wrong or a sense of God in their lives guiding them. So, of course, holiness is necessary. I think growing your conscience, strengthening it, forming it is like exercise for the body. If you don't exercise, even if you did it once or a lot, you know, your fitness won't stay, unfortunately. So, you know, how do we do that? I think, you know, like he said, study, reflection, and prayer. Study, okay, that's important, especially since so many of us have not been well formed in our faith, I feel like. When I was educated at a sweet grade school, but without a lot of resources. We weren't really taught a lot. We were taught that God loves us no matter what, and to pray the rosary, which of course it's great if they didn't teach us much, that they emphasize that. And I'm very thankful for that. You know, we need to study and reflect and pray. And I think reflection is also a big part of it. The culture is very loud and noisy, and we're so overwhelmed with activities that I think the culture could use a little more silence and time to reflect.
I was surprised when the moment came to move and exhume his body that in England, at any rate, the gay movement suddenly erupted in fury and said they didn't want the fact that he was buried with his best friend to be overshadowed. And they implied that the friendship was not a platonic one, it was a homoerotic one. Mm. To anyone who knows Newman and who knows the way he wrote and who understands quite clearly his attitude to appetites and the flesh and the struggle between the flesh and the spirit, this is just the most terrible misreading of him and of sanctity. What was your reaction when you came across this claiming of Newman and his best friendship for, if you like, the propagators of this alternative culture that is, as we would see it, so unholy?
Well, the devil tries to distort everything that is good and attack everything. So we always have to keep that in mind. I remember, in fact, going back to his letters, the truth. It was absolutely ridiculous what they said about him, of course. I remember, in fact, going back to his letters. he wrote something about not wanting to go to a dance because he would be tempted. And of course, he wouldn't be tempted to be dancing with men. That record doesn't support their theories. It's interesting, though, that they would want him on their side. So I think they should just embrace him for the person that he really was instead of trying to distort him into someone that he was not. That goes back to just creating these distortions, you know, going back to the liberalism in religion. There's all kinds of statements these days that are completely untrue. And it's amazing how much traction they get. Someone will say, well, that's not my truth. And I just want to fall over. I don't even understand that. It's like saying that's not my gravity. You know, there's truth or there isn't. You can't just create your own truth. And what it is it just means that they're trying to be their own God. And so, yes, I was appalled by that with Cardinal Newman. But at the same time, it's a recognition of how great Cardinal Newman's life was, that this would touch a nerve with the evil one who's desperate to try to slander his life.
If we move on from that and we accept that as a proper discernment of what took place, and of course I agree with you, and then we look at what the church is trying to do today in the name of inclusion and to change the categories of relationship and expand what marriage is and diminish the role of children quite clearly, because within same-sex relationships, children are not an option. They're sterile, not fertile. How do you see this, the tension between the church being tempted to want to offer a welcome to people who are outside what you might call the normative patterns of human affection, and the fact that the church has always defended marriage and the safe space of a marriage with a biological father, a biological mother, and their children? It's as if we have two systems set against each other, and the church is being bamboozled by niceness rather than truth and revelation.
That's right. The church, of course, has to remember to accept the sinner, but not to condone the sins. There can be no accident that Jesus was born to a family, a mother and a father, you know, Joseph and Mary, obviously son of the Creator, but that had to have been a model for us, knowing that God can do whatever he wants. Jesus could have come into the earth however God willed it. It's something we need to protect, the family. And I find it interesting that Cardinal Newman was canonized on October 13th. Which is the feast of the anniversary of Fatima, of the miracle of the sun.
Yes.
And, you know, Sister Lucia warned that the last and the greatest attack against the church would be against the family. Obviously, if you can destroy the family, then you can make sure that these children grow up without a conscience, and then they will be able to believe anything they're told in society. And so that's kind of the pathway, I think, is protecting the family, protecting children, so they can grow up and know right from wrong and what is true and what is not, and hopefully live a holy life. That's where it starts. But I feel like this attack is definitely on the family. You know, children learn so many virtues. And we talk about them going to school. In America, everyone's really concerned about a university education, getting their studies in mathematics and literature and all this. But in a family, you know, children learn empathy and responsibility and just hard work and honesty. And you know, they fail a lot, of course, and that's where the family comes in. And I think that its importance just cannot be overestimated. I wish society would realize that a family is not an option, it's a necessity.
And you saw the gift of this miracle to you as a gift to a mother and endorsing motherhood.
Yes.
And the family. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, what happened was I became acquainted with Cardinal Newman in August of 2011. And so he cured me about, you know, a year and a half later. So for that whole time, we were very close. And before my pregnancy, in which I had the detached placenta, I had a miscarriage. And I went to the doctor. And immediately when I found out I was pregnant, the baby had no heartbeat. And I was just devastated. And of course, I was close to Newman. So I prayed to him. And I was so worried that I might lose my faith because I had never experienced such tragedy. Not that I was doubting God's love for me or anything like that, but I just realized that it could be on the horizon as one remote possibility. So I prayed to Cardinal Newman and I said, please, Cardinal Newman, help me survive this terrible loss without losing my faith. I don't want to lose a child and my faith. I was very sad. And of course, I did end up miscarrying that child. And after that, I said to myself, I said, do I still believe in Jesus? Do I still love the church? Do I understand this? You know, and I didn't understand this, but I still had everything the same in terms of my relationship with God. And I credited Cardinal Newman for that. And I said, you know, thank you, Cardinal Newman. I'm still a believer in God, and I can believe in him even if I don't understand everything, because I can trust him. And I was so happy about that, that I had survived this ordeal. I said, you know, Cardinal Newman, thank you so much. I promise I will never ask for anything else from you ever again. Because I thought, this, what else could I ask for? I had my faith, you know, and I didn't want him to think I was just using him up for favors. So right after that pregnancy, then I had my doomed pregnancy with Gemma, and I had this placenta and I was hemorrhaging all the time. And I thought, oh boy, I'm not going to ask Cardinal Newman. I'm going to stick to my word. I promised him I would never ask for anything else again. And I figured, you know, it's God's will. He will help me through this. Then my husband had to go out of town. It was 5 days after I had just gotten out of the emergency room in the hospital for all the hemorrhaging. And I was upstairs in my bathroom, and all four of my young children were downstairs, and I couldn't get up off the floor. And I just said, you know, I had to say it. It was an emergency situation. I said, please, Cardinal Newman, make the bleeding stop. And then he suddenly did, and it never came back, and he cured me. So I went back on my word about not asking him for anything else because of the emergency situation. And obviously he helped me. And after he stopped the bleeding, I smelled these roses in the air. It was amazing. And I knew that was him. And it gave me the confidence to go downstairs and check on my children and to be a regular mom again, because I couldn't lift anything and I couldn't walk. I mean, even short distances, I wasn't supposed to go up and down the stairs. And then when I went downstairs to the children and I saw they were all okay, because I had been upstairs for so long, and they were only 6, 5, 3, and 1. And I was worried about them, but I couldn't get downstairs. And I saw them and I said, oh, they're all okay. I said, thank you, Cardinal Newman. And that's when he made a third and a final blast of roses in the air. You know, I just want to mention that because you asked me about motherhood, and he's just so tender and obviously understands the importance of the mother's life to care for her children. It's just beautiful. He's so amazing and beautiful.
I've got two questions of a much less moral and noble kind, but I hope you don't mind my asking them. One's about doctors and the other's about celebrity. So the doctors, when you went to them and said, I've been miraculously healed, what did they say? How did they take it?
Well, I had been in the emergency room 5 days before I was cured, and I had to go get ultrasounds at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, to monitor the condition. And so I just so happened to have an ultrasound scheduled the day of my cure, that Wednesday afternoon. And I was really excited about this because after I had been cured, I figured everything must look pretty good in there. And I couldn't wait to see the doctor. I thought about whether I should tell him that I prayed and that I thought I was miraculously cured. But I decided against it for that day because I had lost a lot of blood. It was very stressful. And I was actually worried that he would think that I had gone mad. I figured the record would speak for itself anyway. He would see something. And I thought it'd be best for him to see it with his own eyes. And then I could explain it, as opposed to me running in and telling him I was cured and then him looking. So I went into that ultrasound that afternoon. The previous ultrasounds, he had always looked at the floor and he looked very sad, and because he had nothing to offer me, sadly, and it was always just bad news. But he did the ultrasound and he said, the first thing he said was, the baby looks perfect. You know, I think he meant the placenta as well, but of course the focus was always on the baby. And he looked so happy. It was so great to see him so happy, because I felt guilty that every time I came in, I was just bringing him bad news. But we were both very happy. He did not lift the order of strict bed rest, which I wasn't following anyway. I guess he figured, you know, if she's laying around, you know, it's not going to hurt. He probably knew I wasn't doing it anyway. So that's how that went. And then later on in a subsequent visit, I told him. And it was amazing because, you know, I was scared to tell him. You know, I thought he would still think I was crazy, but I at least had all the medical evidence on my side. There was no explanation for a rip that was 2.5 times the size of Gemma to be suddenly gone 5 days after measuring it in the emergency room. But anyway, as I told him about the cure, he said, you know, my wife had the same issue in her second trimester. And she was airlifted by a helicopter to a hospital to save her life. And the baby was very tiny and born, but has medical problems to this day. And his wife had to have a hysterectomy to remove her uterus because she would have hemorrhaged to death. So it had a personal touch in his heart. You know, we bonded on that. it further highlights how much I was cured, because after Gemma was born, I went on to have two more children in totally uneventful pregnancies.
Was the doctor a Catholic? Was he a believer when you first encountered him? What effect did it have on him?
Yes, he was a Catholic. I don't know how deep in his faith he was. We never talked about things that personally, but I hope this had a positive impact on him. I think it did. I prayed for him. He retired soon after this, which was sad. I wanted him to keep delivering all of my children. But he said that, you know, Melissa, all of you women always have your babies at 3 a.m. I need some sleep.
Sounds like an old-fashioned doctor. The last thing I want to ask you is what was it like becoming a celebrity? You were the woman that Cardinal Newman healed. People must have looked at you and thought, my goodness, you must be very special. You must be very holy. How have you lived with becoming a celebrity, both in your local church and more widely?
Oh, goodness. Well, I hardly feel like a celebrity in a sense. That's very gracious of you. But, you know, all the fame goes to Newman, as it rightly should, and to God, of course. I'm just that link in a chain, you know, to use his phrase, to highlight the generosity of God and his mercy. As far as my relationship with everything, you know, I thought it was very fascinating. We met many seminarians in Rome when we went to the canonization. And some from India said that people had my picture. They had printed off the internet and had it up in their village. And I must say, I did use that with my children. I said, you have not made your bed. I said, do you know there are people in India with my photo up and you've got to make your bed? So I don't know. I've tried to use it to my advantage. I'm not sure it's helped, but with the kids, they see me still as the same mom they've always known. At church, though, I will tell you this, interestingly, you know, so they know that I've been cured and you know, they see me wrestling with a child trying to get under one of the pews. And, you know, I'm just like everybody else, which is great. It shows that Newman is there to help regular people. So I'm just marketing that fact all the time. There was a woman who came up to me in November last year at church, and she had a Band-Aid on her face. And I said, oh, are you okay? And she said, well, you know, they found some skin cancer on my face. And they're trying to see how bad it is. And I said, oh, it's terrible. And I said, you know, I happen to have a Newman relic on me. So I said, if you want, you know, let's pray to him. So I took that out and I pressed it on her face. And we prayed to Cardinal Newman privately, you know, not in the middle of Mass or, you know, in the back of the church, just us. And then I didn't see her for a while. And then I saw her later on, like about 5 or 6 weeks later, and she came running up to me. And she said, and she had this big smile. And I said, well, how are you feeling? And she said, oh, great. And she said she went to the doctor and it was gone. The cancer, they were just completely gone. So we gave thanks to Newman. It was great. So to the extent that I can still be an instrument leading people to him for their faith or their physical needs, I'm happy to do so. But I'm still a very private person. I have my children. I homeschool all of them except my oldest, because he's gotten too smart for me. but anyway, I'm very happy to help bring people to Newman. I think that once you know him, you just fall in love with him.
Melissa, thank you so much for sharing so personally. And I think all of us are inspired and grateful for the personal healing, and continue to pray for his help in the healing of the church as we face this great spiritual struggle that we have in our day. Thank you very much. God bless you. And thank you for sharing so generously your story. And thank you too for being part of this exciting development in the life of the church.
Thank you so much. The pleasure was all mine.
Bless you.